You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
In 1937, the Chilean poet and world treasure Pablo Neruda wrote his magnificent poem, Spain in Our Hearts, this during the Spanish Civil War. One section of the poem was titled Almería. It was here in February 1937 that the fascist forces of Franco, with their planes and tanks, overtook the civilians fleeing Malaga toward the town of Almería, and the civilians were slaughtered. This week, someone circulated Neruda's poem on the internet. The word Almería had been changed to Gaza. The truth and power of the poem remained as before. We've reached Palestinian-American Ali Abonima to discuss the humanitarian disaster and the political dynamic of Israel's three-week assault on the people of Gaza. Ali Abonima is co-founder of Electronic Intifada, the outstanding English-language source of news on Palestine. Welcome, Ali, and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, Mordecai.
Israeli terrorism, its merciless assault on the people of Gaza, seems to me more depraved each day that passes. How do you perceive it?
Well, I would agree with that assessment. Already over 1,200 Palestinians have been killed. The number of injured is approaching 6,000. More than 90% of these people are civilians. Of the dead, almost 400 are children. Half are women and children. And of course, we always forget about the men, the vast majority of whom are also civilians, many of them elderly men, fathers, brothers, uncles, sons. You have a society just being massacred, and this is happening live on television. The scale of the disaster is hard to put into words. The thing that people in Gaza tell me time and again is that there is nowhere safe. Nobody feels safe. You have an entire population that feels that death could visit themselves or their families at any moment of the day. And if not death, something worse than death. The horrific injuries that have been inflicted on thousands of people from weapons that include white phosphorus, which causes horrific burns all over the body, and these advanced weapons that Israel seems to be testing that just cause the flesh to fall away from the limbs and cause horrific agony and disfigurement. You have thousands of people who will live not just without loved ones, without mothers and fathers, but without limbs, without eyesight. And this, not in a society like Canada, which can afford support and rehabilitation and the kinds of things that people need after such traumas, but in a society that has been systematically devastated. Every civic institution, educational institution, police stations, mosques has been bombed. It's just a hard to put it in words.
Under all the Israeli rhetoric of justification, et cetera, what do you see as the real goals that Israel has and its political calculations with having launched these series of atrocities?
Well, I think it's important to note that the justifications which are being repeated unfiltered through the mainstream media are fabrications. This has nothing to do with rockets. That is an excuse. Israel could have stopped the rockets by maintaining and then renewing the ceasefire that it violated on November 4th, and of course by lifting the blockade. Now, a blockade is an act of war. Israel itself used the pretext of the Egyptian blockade of the Straits of Tiran in 1967 as its pretext for the invasion of Egypt in 1967. So Israel had other ways to stop rocket fire, proven other ways, which is to maintain a ceasefire. So what really lies behind this is two things. One is what they call restoring the deterrent capability of Israel. And that's polite language for the ability to terrorize entire populations and countries into submission. And the reason they felt they needed to do that is because of Israel's defeat in the war against Lebanon in 2006, when Israel suffered a humiliating defeat and wanted to prove that it was big enough to beat up on another country. Israel didn't have a military option. Israel can't go and take on Hezbollah again because it doesn't, in fact, have the military capability to do that. So Gaza was an easy target. The other element which is linked is to try to destroy any remaining Palestinian resistance, to open the way for a kind of a capitulationist Palestinian-Israeli deal led by the Palestinian collaborators in Ramallah, Mahmoud Abbas and his group. And so the idea was that Hamas was the last obstacle remaining towards creating a Palestinian Bantustan subservient to Israel and headed by Mahmoud Abbas. So those were the two political goals that Israel was trying to achieve. And in fact, it has achieved neither of them, because Israel will end this without having destroyed Hamas. Hamas emerges much more popular and much more credible, having withstood the Israeli army for now almost 3 weeks. And of course, Israel has succeeded in discrediting even further the so-called moderates, Abbas and his group, who have been openly collaborating with the occupation. So you could say Israel has achieved none of its goals from this savage attack on Gaza.
In March 1960, the South African government massacred unarmed black Africans protesting apartheid in the city of Sharpeville, and that massacre became a turning point in the world's perception of the moral depravity of the apartheid regime and its utter illegitimacy. Do you think the outrage worldwide in unprecedented numbers and moral outrage mark an irreversible turning point in the perception of Israel?
I can tell you this. Obviously, I can't see the future. But in my 37 years, I have never experienced a situation like this. I feel that the reaction and the outpouring of horror at what Israel is doing is unprecedented. It supersedes what happened in 2006 with Lebanon, with the start of the first intifada, the second intifada, even the massacres of Sabra and Shatila in 1982. I feel that something qualitatively is changing, and that very mainstream people who have been generally either too apathetic or too afraid to speak up about what Israel is doing are starting to do so. And I think another thing is happening. It may be subtle, but I think it's unmistakable, in that the Holocaust defense that Israel has abused for so many years to try to deflect criticism and to claim that, you know, Israel is the state of the Jews, is entitled to do whatever it wants, that card has now expired. And in fact, the Holocaust, the history of the Holocaust, has become somewhat of a liability, because now very respectable and mainstream people, including many Jewish public figures, are starting to actually compare Israel's actions to those of Nazis. I didn't really expect to see that happening, but you've had people like the well-known British MP Gerald Kaufman, who just the other day made an astounding statement. This is, he's a lifelong Zionist, who told about how his grandmother was shot dead in her bed by the Nazis in Poland. And he said, my grandmother did not die so that Israel could massacre Palestinian grandmothers in Gaza. And then he compared the justifications given by the Avital Leibovich, the ubiquitous blonde-haired Israeli military spokeswoman. And I note her hair color, because Israel deliberately chose blonde women. It was part of their media strategy to soften their image. But Kaufman compared Leibovich's statements to those of Nazis. Now, for that to come from someone like Gerald Kaufman, and there have been other leading figures in Britain from the Jewish community comparing Gaza to the Warsaw Ghetto, I think is a quantitative change that makes it possible for others to step up and say frankly how they feel about the horrors that are going on. Yes, I think this will be a turning point.
Well, thank you very much for your words today and your thoughts, and we'll try and keep in touch as well to follow up the machinations of negotiations that are presently underway with you. I hope you'll be available.
I will, with pleasure. Thank you very much, Mordecai.
Thank you, Ali. My guest has been Ali Abu Nima, co-founder of Electronic Intifada. This is the outstanding English language source for information and analysis of events in Palestine.